Hey, it's Scott Petrek with another episode of the Browns Zone Coverage Podcast. The Browns beat the Steelers 13-10 on Sunday to improve to 7-3. For the first time in 15 tries, the Browns beat the Ravens and Steelers in consecutive games. Rookie quarterback Dorian Thompson-Robinson was good, bad, then excellent, and Dustin Hopkins made another winning field goal. Here to discuss the win, Joe Flacco, in Sunday's game in Denver is Dave Chudowski of Go, the WKYC Morning News. What's up, Chud?
Hey, Scott, we have nothing to talk about. Just kind of boring, man.
We can talk about what you want to eat for Thanksgiving.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, I think I've brought this up before on the pod. I tell this to a lot of people. When the Cavs won the NBA championship, I remember one of my first thoughts working the job. I was there covering it for Channel 3 Sports. And I remember thinking, man, I don't know how to do this. I've never covered a championship. I mean, I did Ohio State when they won it all, but that's different. That's not the city of Cleveland. That, you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Like, I know how to cover the heartbreaks. I know how to cover the dramatic loss. I know how to cover the playoff wins and winning series, but I'd never done that before. And I was just sitting here thinking right before you went on and started that, and then you made me think it more when you said they have never beaten the Ravens and Steelers back-to-back, and I don't know how to handle it. I don't know how to, like, right? Like, this is incredible to beat those two teams back-to-back.
Well, it is. And first of all, it's amazing that they've never done it. And I went back and looked, and they had 14 tries where they played both of them back-to-back, and most of them, they got drilled by both. You know, it's not like, oh, they had so many chances because they beat one the 1 week. Usually they lost the first week and then lost the second week. But they had that chance. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit last week, Judd. I think the emotions were a little different because of the Deshaun Watson injury, and people might have had their enthusiasm kind of dampened a little bit. But then to go out and win the way they did Sunday and beat Pittsburgh and do that back-to-back, I think everybody's kind of on board again. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, people are getting carried away and dreaming about a Super Bowl maybe, but I think the excitement's there. I think it's realistic to think that this team can go to the playoffs. And winning the way they did against the Steelers, I think kind of cemented that, where if they had lost, and they could have lost, right, it's 10-10 with 78 seconds left, then it's a whole different attitude, because then it's a little bit more of an uphill climb. You don't know if DTR can do it at the end. But that win, I think, did a lot, not just for the playoff chances, but kind of the collective psyche.
Well, you just said they could have lost. Well, yeah, and you know what? They could have lost to the 49ers, too. They right. could have lost to the – I mean, there's games that – basically, my point is they're starting to win these games that historically we see them lose. That's a big difference right now. I mean, they're winning these games.
No, that's a great point. And I think it was an ESPN stats and info thing. It's a franchise record 4 games that they've won with a score inside the last 2 minutes. And I'm going to try to write that today. Just about kind of the whole formula, right? You have to be in a game. The defense has to keep you in the game. And then you have to have a quarterback go make some plays at the end. And then you got to have a kicker make the kick, right? Like, it all comes together. And they've had that formula this year many times, right? The San Francisco game, the Colts game, they go get a touchdown at the end. And then the last 2 weeks. So a lot goes into that. Situational awareness, which Kevin Stefanski talked about a lot. Guys knowing exactly what to do, including, okay, we run the ball and then spike it, right? Everybody has lined up and we spike it to kick a field goal on the last player with 2 seconds left. That takes practice. It takes preparation. And the Browns have been really good in that area. And again, that's another feather in Stefanski's cap.
Yeah, not often, Scott, does it go the way that you think it's going to go. But I'm in two different pick'ems leagues, I guess you could call it, or pools, I guess you'd call it. I do a family one I've told you about where we just pick games straight up, and you have to pick the Browns game. And then I'm in another one with the spread, and I pick the Browns to win. But in the one that I'm in, and now this is kind of cheating because this was before the Watson news, the line stays, right? Steelers +3.5. So I took the Steelers +3.5, and I had the Browns to win. I picked them by 3. You picked them by 3. It's hard to do. That's exactly what happened. I mean, Very few times does it go exactly the way you think, but this is it. I mean, they won the game, but not by much. 3 points.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're going to see over these last seven games, Chud. Maybe not every week, but more times than not, I think the Browns aren't going to be big favorites. They're probably not going to be big underdogs because their defense is going to keep them in games. And it's going to come down to close games. And that's – I know it's hard for fans. You know, Wyatt Teller, right guard, yesterday talked about how these close games give him a heart attack and he'd rather win by 47 points. And I'm sure fans go through the same thing. And they're tough games to write. I mean, I had – again, we've talked about it. I had the if they win and if they lose going, you know, and it's tough going back and forth. And you got to make sure you pick the right one when you go to post it. And you just never know, right? I mean, when it's tied with a minute and a half left, it's hard to say one way or the other, you know. And then when the Steelers have the ball, you start writing the lose. And when the Browns get it back, you go back to the win. But I think we're going to see more. I just think we're going to see more games like that to finish the season, just because I don't, you know, and it's only two starts for DTR, but it's hard to think that they're going to score a ton of points, right, and be this explosive offense, which means you're going to set yourself up for a lot of tight games.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's talk about DTR. Basically, my thought on him is he was outstanding at the end when it mattered, and that's when they needed him to come through, right? But I think the key to me is obviously, I mean, anyone with eyeballs knows that he wasn't lights out or amazing.
Right.
But the key was, you know, he didn't turn the ball over a lot. He didn't, you know, it's kind of like the old Ravens back, you know, when they had the great defense, right? And
Trent Dilfer, yeah.
Trent Dilfer. I mean, you just wanted to make sure he didn't lose it. The defense was, now I'm not comparing this defense to that Ravens defense, although this defense is pretty darn good. My point is, he kept them in the game. He didn't give the game away.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's what they needed him to do. And that's what they will continue to need him to do because of that defense, right? How this defense is going to get in trouble and how this team is going to get in trouble is if you turn the ball over deep in your own territory, right? And you give the other team a short field, because then, you know, the defense will still try, but it's hard. It's just hard when you're given a short field as a defense. You give it one play and it's a touchdown, right? We saw that in that first DTR game against the Ravens, right? A pick, Ravens get the ball at the 10, Lamar Jackson scores from the 10. Like, that's hard for a defense to stop and hold teams to field goals. If you make them go the length of the field, that the Browns defense is really good that way. So I think that has to be how Dorian Thompson-Robinson plays. That has to be how Kevin Stefanski coaches. And, you know, Kevin Stefanski is an aggressive coach. I think we've seen it. He's scaled back that aggression given the quarterback situation he's dealt with much of this year. We saw it again Sunday. I mean, on the first possession, they got to Pittsburgh's 40 or 44 and punted on fourth down. That's something Stefanski, I don't think more times than not, would do, except rookie quarterback, great defense. You want to play the field position game. And I think he's adaptable enough that he's going to do that and continue to do that. And I think that's how you have to play, because you can't just give teams easy touchdowns, because that's the way you get beat. Because this Browns defense, and I'm convinced, and I think the defense keeps getting better. If you just don't turn the ball over, like, there's a maximum points they're going to give up, right? Like, that's how it feels to me. And then that gives your offense a chance to win the game.
So moving forward, DTR is going to start this week against Denver, right?
Yep. Yeah. And
what about
I mean, Joe Flacco, right? So they bring him in. I would expect he becomes the number two. I don't know if it's this week that he becomes the number two. We saw P.J. Walker. We talked about it. And P.J. Walker, like, got the Browns two wins, almost got him a third win. I think he overachieved. I trust, even though Joe Flacco hasn't played since last year, I trust Joe Flacco more. And, you know, maybe that will change if I see Joe Flacco on the field. But you can't, you know, P.J. Walker just turned it over too much. You know, Joe Flacco, he doesn't move, but he throws it really well. I think he makes quick decisions. You can stretch the field with Joe Flacco, I'll tell you that. He throws the ball deep and has always been good at that. You know, his completion percentage was never great, But that's because he's throwing the ball down the field a bunch. So I think he becomes the number two and then only plays if DTR gets hurt or if DTR really falters and they feel like, oh my gosh, the only way to save our season is to make a move there. But I think he's an insurance policy, and it makes sense, right? They needed to sign a third guy to have a third guy. To me, it makes sense to sign an experienced veteran that can give you a chance if needed. Like signing another young guy just as a body, that doesn't help this team as they try to get to the playoffs. Joe Flacco might be able to help this team as it tries to go to the playoffs, but the plan is to stick with DTR unless something goes haywire.
I love having that veteran presence in there. You know, that could go a long way.
Yeah, especially, you know, as a mentor, right? Just having around and helping DTR during the week prepare on the sidelines. And the other factor in that is Deshaun Watson's not going to be around every day. He's going to have surgery in LA this week, right? So how are that rehab works and how much time he needs to be in LA, how much time he can get back to Cleveland. The Browns are going to be in LA for a week. It's going to be a little disjointed. And then the quarterback room would have been just DTR and PJ Walker. Walker's been around, but not a ton. So I think Joe Flacco adds a lot in that way.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's, real quick, Njoku, you know, made a lot of catches, but he dropped a lot as well.
Yeah, he did. And I got one quarter left to watch on the rewatch. And I think I got him with two drops already. And I think it gets to four by the end of the game. It's weird because that's how he was early in his career, where he would drop too many balls and he felt inconsistent, whether it's practice or games. That just would be like normal throws that clanged off his hands. And I think he's gotten way better at that and has become more consistent. And then it was a little bit of a, I don't want to call it flashback because maybe it's just a bad game. Guys have bad games. But he certainly did and wasn't the reliable guy that he's become. I mean, now he's evolved into one of the best tight ends in the league, which is really a credit to him. It's a credit to the Browns for sticking with him because, you know, they extended him when I thought that was foolish because it's too much money and we can argue if it's still too much money. But he certainly made the contract that he has seem legitimate and worthwhile because he's just continues to get better. He's still young, even though he's been in the league since 2017. But then, you know, the good part of it is he makes a catch on the final drive. He continues to run really hard. And then he says how unacceptable his performance was. And he's going to go home and get on the jugs machine. And he does. And then he FaceTimes Kevin Stefanski to let him know that he's on the jug. So I think he's got the right attitude without a doubt.
Yeah, no question. And right now, confidence level, like even with the drops, like after Amari Cooper, like, he's my next guy that I feel confident with. I mean, until Elijah Moore takes over that role, I know it's a tight end versus a receiver, but as far as a pass catcher, like, I feel like Njoku's number two right now.
I think that's a great point. I think that's how the Browns coaches feel as well. And it's a trust factor. He's a big body, right? You could kind of throw to him in space, and he's going to – or not in space, but you could throw to him, and he can create space, right? Kind of post up on those hook routes because he's a big guy. But you're right. I agree. I think it's Cooper and then Njoku in that pecking order.
Scott, how was that not a safety at the beginning of the game?
Yeah.
I was bewildered by that.
Yeah, it's interesting, Chud. You know, it's kind of weird because you don't know if does a whole ball have to be outside the goal line? Does only part of the ball have to be outside the goal line? And according to Gene Steratore, the you know rules official on the broadcast, it's the whole ball has to be outside the goal line. Well, it certainly didn't look like the whole ball was outside when Garrett made contact with Pickett. Pickett was falling backward to begin with. So it should have been a safety. Now, I happen to be looking at Stefanski because I'm waiting for him to challenge, right? And I thought it was a play he could challenge. He wasn't 100% sure if he could. So he's talking to the official on the sideline, who, you know, I don't know if it's the back judge or the line judge. And he's talking to the guy. And he's asking, according to Stefanski, he's asking him, okay, what's the process here? Can I challenge this? You know, what's going on? Because you also have sometimes New York will step in and be like, hey, you know, after consulting, it is a safety kind of thing, right? Like on a spot. So I think Stefanski's waiting for that to play out. He's waiting for his the replay guys and the replay people in the booth to say yes, challenge. Finally gets the go ahead from everybody, and he throws the flag down. And I'm watching it, and the official from the sideline takes like two steps, like he's going to call the play dead. Looks, and the Steelers had already started the next play, and he lets it go. And now that's a judgment call, because we've seen coaches get timeouts after it looks like a play starts, right? Like, that's a borderline thing. And they didn't give it. They didn't give Stefanski the challenge, and I think he would have won the challenge. So, you know, you can argue that Stefanski should have thrown it earlier, should have known, you know, that you can challenge that, and it was worth challenging. There's a lot of moving pieces there. You don't want to give up a challenge, you know, on the second drive of the game. But it could have played, it could have wound up with a big role, right? Like, if that game goes to overtime and you're looking at those 2 points that they don't get, it could have wound up being a big play in the game. He winds up challenging later in the first quarter when Jerome Ford scores, but they call him short of the goal line. He wins that challenge. And that one, he threw the challenge flag like 20 yards and it landed at the guy's foot. And, you know, Stefanski said he just wanted to make sure the guy saw it. To me, that was a little frustration and like, hey, I should have gotten the original challenge.
Hey, I think I saw a flash come on my phone. Canada got bounced from the Steelers. Did you see that?
Yeah, Matt Canada, I was trying to think of the right – embattled offensive coordinator. Right? I mean, he's been getting grief in Pittsburgh forever, even before this season. And then, you know, for how bad they've been on offense, they've been outgained every game. They've been outgained. Pickett's thrown for like under 150 yards, at least the last two games. It might be a longer stretch. You know, I think they have some limitations, starting with Kenny Pickett, but they also have a couple good running backs and a couple good receivers and a good tight end. So I think, you know, I'm not a fire the play caller kind of guy, but maybe this is an okay example for when it's all right to do that.
So let's go with the Browns defense. Obviously, it looked great. Was that mostly them, or is that a combination of, you know, the Steelers offense struggling this year? I know they had the big touchdown run and,
right,
you know, but all year they've struggled, as you just talked about. But, you know, how do you come out of this one?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's both. You know, they're not – I was going to say they're not the Patrick Mahomes Chiefs, but the Patrick Mahomes Chiefs aren't scoring a ton of points either. But, you know, the Steelers have their issues on offense. I don't think that – to me, that doesn't take anything away from the performance of the Browns defense. You have the long 74-yard touchdown run by Jaylen Warren. Newsom takes a bad angle, misses a tackle. Ryan McLeod kind of gets sucked up and lets him get out the gate. And then he's gone, despite – I'll tell you what, Denzel Ward was flying down the sideline and closing in on Warren until Warren cut back inside. It just reminded me how fast Denzel Ward is. But – outside of that play, you know, there's maybe a screen to Warren. There's another 20-yard run by Warren. And that was it. Like, George Pickens had four catches for 30-some yards. Like, that was it. They got pressure on Pickett, which was evidenced by the Myles Garrett sack on the first defensive snap. I thought the defense played like the defense has been playing and how I expect it to play. Good up front, good in the back end. If you listen to Kenny Pickett, the Browns played more zone than they had been. And I think that was, you know, Greg Newsom said that was part of that was just being a third and long, and it's you can play zone in those situations. It confused, I think, the Steelers and Kenny Pickett. They were ready to have all these man calls, and the Browns are in some zone. But the defense, like I said earlier, I just think it continues to trend in the right direction. Now they're going to have to overcome some injuries, right? Ryan McLeod's out for the season with a torn biceps. He'd been playing for Juan Thornhill. We don't know if Juan Thornhill's going to be back at safety, so they could be thin there and go with undrafted rookie Ronnie Hickman. Anthony Walker Jr. is week to week with a hamstring. Week to week means he's going to miss at least a couple. Like, that tends to be the when Stefanski says that. He said, we're working through it, which to me means injured reserve is a possibility, which is a minimum 4 games. You know, he plays a bunch of snaps. He's your signal caller a lot of the time. He's a captain. They missed him a bunch last year when he got hurt early in the season and missed the rest of the year. So they're going to have to get through those injuries. And the defense has been relatively injury-free compared to the offense, especially. So that's something they're going to have to overcome. I think they're deep enough to do that. but it bears watching those injuries. But having said that, I still expect the defense to keep playing really well. They got a big time front and a big time cornerback group.
Yeah. So you say big time front, big time cornerback group. Man, they're just fun to watch. What do you think is the main thing about them that is the key to what makes them thrive? You know, if you had to pinpoint it down to one thing.
Man, that's a great question, Sean. Man, if I had to go one thing, I'm going to go Jim Schwartz, because that entails so much, right? It entails the scheme, which is an attacking scheme. It entails or includes the attitude, right? And not just the scheme attacking, but the aggressive attitude. It is the culture. It's the, we're going to celebrate everything. We're going to play with swagger and badassery that he talks about, right? So like, so that kind of feels like it trumps everything, but I'm going to hedge here and go right behind that is Myles Garrett playing out of his mind and having compliments across that front.
Yeah, it's a good answer. I was wondering if you'd go Schwartz, so not surprised at all. You know, we've talked about it how many times, but boy, thank goodness they made the decision on the kicker.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, and it's kind of weird, Chad, and I almost feel bad. Like, obviously, I write about the fact that they win the game, and or how they win the game, and Hopkins kicks another game winner, and, you know, our lead note was about Hopkins after the game. But I almost feel like I don't, you know, there's so much other parts in the game, and the guy's supposed to make a 34-yard field goal at the end that, like, to me, that's not the number one thing, right? Like, it's DTR, it's the defense. So I'm like, hey, am I giving this guy enough credit? And so I'm glad you brought that up, because he deserves all the credit in the world. He's made such an impact, not only making the winning kicks and the field goals that he's made all year, but just calming things down. You know what I mean? Like, he's settled everything down, and it gives everyone across the team confidence. So, yeah, that's a huge move. I mean, he's arguably kicking as well as anybody in the league right now. I mean, he's 26 for 29, something like that on field goals, one extra point missed. He's been phenomenal. And now when you get when they get the chance to win the game at the end, I have no doubt that he's going to make it.
All right, Scott, we've talked about a lot of the big names and the guys that have stepped up, but how about this guy, Kevin Stefanski? I mean, we continue to talk about him every week and gone pretty in depth with him, but you know, starting to get some love, I think, huh?
Yeah, I think he deserves it, Chud. And you're right. I brought it up last week. I wrote about it last week, but I felt like the analysis I wrote saying he was kind of closing in on an extension because he was doing so well, I feel like it got kind of lost in the Deshaun Watson news. So I just wanted to emphasize it again. I mean, they're 7-3. He's won games with three different quarterbacks. The Browns committed one penalty on Sunday. I can't remember a game where the Browns played that clean. And that was an illegal hands penalty on right tackle James Hudson, the third. You know, they're winning games late. The team knows. I'm writing right now about the late wins that the Browns have had this year. And, you know, you need good quarterback play at the end. You need good kicking at the end. But you also need to be prepared. And Stefanski calls it situational awareness. And the guys have that. And, you know, they ran a play. If you remember at the end of Sunday's game, I thought they would let the clock run out, take a timeout, and kick the field goal. Instead, they took a timeout, ran another play, got a couple more yards, lined up, did a quick spike because they were out of timeouts, and then kicked the field goal. And you have to trust your guys to run that operation correctly. If you get a false start, the game could be over, right, because there's a runoff. Like, a bunch of stuff could go wrong, but he really trusts his guys because he has them so prepared. So I think he's just done an outstanding job. Seven games left. You know, it's probably still too early to give him the extension. I think you got to make sure they get to the playoffs first. But I think he's certainly headed in that direction, and I think he deserves a ton of credit. And, you know, the next step is probably to get DTR to take that another step, right? Expand the offense, open it up, let him throw downfield. I think that was a tough to do against Pittsburgh with how good Pittsburgh's pass rush is, and you wanted to make sure there weren't any turnovers. But at some point, you're going to have to trust your quarterback more, and I think Stefanski will But I just think he's done a great job managing everything that comes with his job.
Yeah, imagine if he had Patty Mahomes or Josh Allen or Jalen Hurts or, you know, one of the big guns, right?
Right. And, you know, they expected Deshaun Watson to be that guy, and he really never was this year. You know, you saw glimpses, but he's hurt too much. You know, they were going to be a spread offense and throw the ball over the field this year, and they've had to adjust from that. Stefanski deserves credit for hiring Jim Schwartz and Bubba Ventrone. You know, because this guy's a big personality. He's not afraid of that. We've talked about that. So just all of it together, I think is a credit to Stefanski.
Hey, Scott, can't move on to the Denver game until we talk about the voice of the Browns, Jimmy
Yes.
Donovan. And speaking of Stefanski, he gave Jimmy a game ball in the locker room after. I don't know if you happened to see that, but yeah. It was on social media. We had it on Channel 3. A bunch of times yesterday morning and then all throughout the day yesterday. Jimmy was back to the point after on Channel 3, which was great. Good to have him back at Channel 3, but boy, awesome to have him back in the booth, the voice of the Browns. He sounded great. Smashed that guitar. That was pretty awesome.
It was great. I think that was classy by Stefanski, giving him the game ball in the locker room. I thought Jimmy looked great. The guitar thing was cool. Then he gets back up to do the play-by-play. You know, you got to run back up, take the elevator back up. It was great to see him in the press box. Obviously, he's missed when he's not there. So it was cool. And it added to – it not only added, it was a key component to what was an emotional day down there, right? Nick Chubb was back, waved to the crowd a couple of times. You know, he trotted out for the introduction on his crutches. They showed him on the scoreboard in the fourth quarter, waving from the suite. You know, he just had his second knee surgery. You know, and that fired up everybody. Deshaun Watson's out there, and he's going to surgery this week, right? So there's a whole bunch of emotion involved in that game, and Jimmy was a huge, huge part of it.
Yeah, I mean, and if you listen, there are some great play-by-play announcers in the league, but he's right up there at the top, maybe the best. I mean, it really, and this is not, you know, to, you know, put down anyone that filled in for him when he was gone, but it just isn't the same when he's not there, you know?
Oh, it's not. And Joe Bitonio said that last week. He goes, I like to listen to the highlights on Instagram, and you're used to hearing Jimmy's voice, right? The Browns link up the plays with Jimmy's voice, and it's just different when it's not his voice. And you know, he got recognition nationally too. I don't know if you saw it, Chud. Good Morning Football on NFL Network mentioned it. I was driving home Sunday night, and you know, they do the recap of games on Sirius NFL radio, and they had Jimmy's voice and mentioned it. So well deserved, and even in the broadcast, the TV broadcast, they mentioned Jimmy. So well deserved.
Yeah, no question. All right, good to have Jimmy back. And now we move on to the Broncos. And let's get an update here. Got Broncos minus 2.5. The over-under is 34.5. So, well, yesterday when I first put it out yesterday, it was 1.5. So it looks like it's gone up to 2.5. This team's hot, man. Sunday Night Football, they beat the Vikings. They've won 4 straight. And not just any 4 straight. They beat Kansas City, Buffalo, and the Vikings, three of those wins out of the 4. You know, they're playing really well. And it's crazy to think after they just got hammered by the Dolphins that they're doing this.
Yeah, no, those are all great points. That run of teams that they beat is significant, right? You can dismiss winning streaks. It's hard to dismiss beating those teams. You know, and to do it after losing, I'm looking up that score right now, that Miami game. They got 70-20. 70-20. It's Miami in week 3 to drop to 0-3. And then they beat the Bears, lose to the Jets, and then they get on this run. So, you know, they're playing close games. You know, they beat Kansas City 24-9, playing good defense. They beat the Packers 19-17, Buffalo 24-20, and then Minnesota 21-20. So, you know, it reminds me a little bit of the Browns. They're relying on their defense. They're being careful on offense, running or not. They're turning over at a way less rate than they were early in the season. They had 4 games of 2 or more turnovers.
you know, Russell Wilson's making a couple plays. They're running the ball a little bit. They got a couple receivers on the outside. They're playing good defense. Sean Payton's a good coach, right? He's always had a good scheme. So, you know, I expect him to be better than that start, right? I was surprised. I thought Sean Payton, they had a good, decent roster. So, you know, this is more like I thought they'd play, but I wouldn't say that when they were 0-3, especially with that 70-20 loss. So they're playing well, and I got to mention, Chud, they got 12 turnovers, takeaways on defense in the last three games. So if you're doing that, that gives you a chance to beat anybody, and it reminds me a little bit about Pittsburgh. And the Browns are going to be – Browns, mainly DTR, are going to have to be careful with the ball, because I think you can beat this Denver team, but it's going to be awfully hard to do on the road. And if you turn it over, and obviously we can see that they know how to take the ball away.
Yeah, no question. Anything else on the Broncos before we get to prediction?
Chud, I need to squeeze in. We ran out of time last week. I got to squeeze the trivia, right? Real quick.
Yep.
I read it 3 weeks ago or whatever. So just to refresh, and there's no way we're going to get this. And I already know the answer, and I looked it up. But the question was, Gerard Warren was the only player in the top seven picks of the 2001 draft to not make the Pro Bowl. The Browns took him number three. So who were the other six picks in the top seven, not Gerard Warren, that went to the Pro Bowl? So just real quick, could you think of any of those? It's 2001. It's 22 years ago. Could you think of any of the picks in the top seven that year?
Gerard Warren, 2001. Didn't you name one last time?
Well, LT, right? LT, LaDainian Tomlinson LT. Went number five. Yeah.
LT, and then Warren. So there's you have to name five others?
Yeah.
Or
five others. I got one of them. I got one of them correct.
I feel like there's another big name that was right around LT. But I'm just drawing a blank. Yeah, I'm just not good at this right now. It's I'm not tough. Even going to try.
I'm telling you, I spent you probably sent this to me 3 weeks ago. And like, I'd be playing golf and I try to think of it. Like, you know, that was racking my brain. I did come up with Michael Vick was number one. So I figured out quarterback, and I done on Michael Vick. Leonard Davis, the tackle, went number two. Did not remember him. Justin Smith went four to the Bengals, defensive end. Maybe I should have remembered him. And then the big one, Richard Seymour, went number six to New England. And the Browns could have taken him. Like, that would have kind of played the same position as Warren. It would have been a fit. So I think LT and Seymour were the big regrets. And then Andre Carter went number seven to San Francisco. So that was a really hard one. And then my buddy Zach here sent another one. So this one will give people time to think about. Chud, you might be able to come up with part of this. I got half the question right, and I knew the other two guys. I just couldn't think of their names. I could picture them. But the question is, name all four receivers the Browns took in the 2016 draft. Now, it was Sashi Brown, his draft. He took four receivers in the 2016 draft. So think on that and name them. I'll give you a hint. One was in the first round.
So. Can I at least give a stab at one?
Yeah, go ahead.
Robiski?
Nope.
No. What year was he?
He was earlier than that, because he was here when – wasn't he here when his dad was coach? I want to say he was. I'm going to look it up real quick. But he was a second rounder. I think he was earlier, Chud. So anyway, people can ruminate on that. I'm taking – I already know the answer, but I thought of it, looked it up. I'm giving myself almost full credit for this one, but we'll let people think. Robiski was – he was 2009. Mangini took him in 2009.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm way
7
off.
Years off, but
– Yeah. I guess 2016 is a little bit closer than I thought. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Then, you know, maybe I'm thinking of someone else. I'm going to have to think about this. So did you get all four?
Well, I got two of them for sure, and then I could picture the other two guys. And I just got their names wrong. One of them I was real close on the name, and the other one I was not. But I could picture talking to these guys in the locker room.
So. See, if it was 2017, I could nail this, no question. All right,
that was the Miles draft. Yeah, right.
No, I'm saying
1 year difference.
I'm just saying there's been a lot that's happened in my mind since that year. So that's
I got you.
Yeah. All right. All right, are you ready for predictions?
I am.
All right, we are both 7-3. We match the Browns' record. I can remember the three I've gotten wrong. San Francisco, at Baltimore, and oh my gosh. Well, I just was thinking about this earlier.
You got Pittsburgh right in week two, didn't you?
Yeah, I got Pittsburgh right. I think it's we both got it wrong, whichever one it was. Which do you remember yours? Which three you got wrong?
Well, I got San Francisco. I got San Francisco wrong. I got Pittsburgh wrong. And I probably got Baltimore in week four wrong.
Oh, that's what it is. Right? When they played the Ravens at home.
Yeah.
So Ravens at home, San Francisco, and I got Ravens on the road wrong, and you got Steelers in week Pittsburgh two. Wrong. Yep. Yeah. So we're both 7-3. So, you know, not bad. And I got to be honest, Scott, I'm trying to think. Maybe the Ravens game at home I would reconsider just because of the quarterback deal there. Sure. We could have switched our mind last minute, but we made that prediction before Watson was out, right?
Yeah, I mean, I stuck with it, but yes, we did. Yeah,
we maybe should have switched after that.
Correct.
But I don't sit there and think, oh, I was an idiot for picking San Francisco. And I don't think I was an idiot for, you know, picking Baltimore to win in Baltimore. So basically what I'm saying is I stand by pretty much every prediction I've made. And I think you do too. And we're 7-3. I think this is the toughest one so far. This is one where I could go either way. I got to be honest.
I think you're 100% right. I was going to say that too. I mean, this is, I find this one difficult. And, you know, I mean, the point spread kind of proves that, right? It's a 2-point spread, a 2.5 now. Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a close game, and I think it's really difficult to pick this one.
Well, I think you're up first, unless you want me to go.
No, go. I was delaying as long as I could.
You know, real quick, you know what's funny? I was writing down my score that I wanted to, when you were going over the Broncos schedule, you were naming off some of their games, and you actually named score as I was writing that exact score down.
Interesting.
It's so crazy.
Yeah. Well, this my score is too generic, but I that's what I landed on. I'm going to stick with it. My big questions are DTR on the road. He's not played on the road in the league. Denver's not an easy place to play. The Browns are bad there historically. It's loud. They're going to be fired up because Denver's back in the playoff contention. Holiday weekend, all that. I know my uncle and his buddies are going to be there for cheering for the Browns, but I don't know if they're offset the other 70,000 people. So I think he's got to prove something there. You know, the operation was so clean. We talked about the one penalty. The Browns were great when they went to Seattle. They didn't have any of those issues with P.J. Walker at quarterback. They got in and out of the huddle, and that place is louder than Denver. So it's doable, and they have experience there, but they're doing it with the rookie quarterback. So I need to see that. You know, it's a team that's won 4 in a row in Denver versus a team that's won 3 in a row with the Browns, and I feel like they're both kind of like it's time for them to lose. You know, like that's, you know, we talked about a bunch. Like, you can only win so many games in a row. I feel like both of them are kind of, like, set up for a loss. The Browns have been in through so many, you know, trials and tribulations lately. Is this a game where they kind of crash emotionally? I think that's possible. Having said that, I don't think Denver's a good enough team, like, to win 5 in a row. Like I think they're due to not get all the takeaways and maybe turn it over on offense. It looked like they were susceptible to the run against Minnesota. I think the Browns can run it against them. So maybe I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid, Chud, but I'm going to go Browns 2017.
Wow, well done, man. You totally had me thinking you were going to pick Denver. And then you told – wow.
Well, that's how conflicted I am.
Yeah, yeah. I'm the same way. I mean, I set you up by telling you this is the first game where I could see it going either way. And I don't mean any other game. I didn't think it could go any other way. I just felt pretty comfortable in my prediction. Most games, you know, there was a couple where, all right, you know, I mean, listen, we could have seen the Steelers win last week, but I felt really comfortable in the Browns win. Yeah. I told my, I was texting my buddy, who, by the way, I know listens to this. So, hey, Johnny, if you're listening, you know, last week, big win. He told me how huge it was for them to, he even wanted me to comment with you going into the game about how huge it would be to beat Baltimore and Pittsburgh in back-to-back weeks. So I texted him after the game. I said, hey, big win. Felt good about it. I just really felt like the Browns were going to win that game. This one, though, you brought up all the reasons that I was going to bring up. It's like you were in my head. And it's like DTR on the road, man. Everything's got to go perfect. I could just picture him making just a key mistake that just turns the game around. You know, I think they're 7-24 all time against Denver. They struggle there, like you said. But then I go back to your point. You're so right. And this is why you got the Baltimore game right. And it wasn't a great comment. Baltimore was due to lose.
Yeah.
I mean, Denver's due to lose as well. But can the Browns do that again on the road? And the other thing, too, is I'm also thinking about my overall season prediction of 10-7. And I think I'm changing that to 11-6. Not that it counts. You can't change your overall. But in my head, I'm starting to look at the schedule and I'm thinking, man, I think they can win 11 now. But in order to get 10 or to get 11, I mean, if they win this game, man, then I'm thinking they could win 12 or 13. So I'm going to go Denver. I know I disappoint you, but I'm going to go 19-17, which is crazy because we're 1 point off, just different teams winning.
Yeah. I mean, I could totally see that. Now, I think the season's not over if they get swept on this two-game West Coast trip, right? They're going to go to Denver, then they're staying in LA. If they lose both of them and come back to Cleveland 7-5, they still got the Bears, Jets, and a Bengals team without Joe Burrow. So you can still get to 10, and 10 gets you in the playoffs, I think. But I think if they want to stay in the AFC North race and continue this momentum and kind of quiet things and maybe quiet the quarterback conversation, they need to win one of these two games. I think that would be really helpful. And they could win both, right? They could win either. They could win both. They could lose both. Like, the spread's going to be the same, right? They're going to be like 2-point underdogs probably both games. Maybe they're favored in LA, depending on how Denver goes. But that's how these next two games are going to go. I think they'll be real close, and they could go either way. And I'll probably pick them to split, so I'm picking them to win the first one.
Yeah, and right now, in my mind, I'm doing the opposite. Because I was thinking I might pick them to win the week after. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see how it plays out. But, man, this hurts. This is what sucks. I kind of want to pick them to win. You know, obviously I want them to win, and I'll be rooting for them. That's what I hate about the prediction game, is when you pick against them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I never understood why, but, like, fans get so bothered by it. Like, who cares what Joe Blow picks, right? Like, they'll show the NFL Network. Who cares if everybody picked against him? You know? Like,
I know.
I find that silly. But, you know, you got to pick what you think. Yeah. That's why you're a professional, dude.
Well, it's like everyone gets mad at Harbaugh because he calls Ohio State Ohio, right?
Yeah.
Well, what does everyone here do? We call them the team up north.
Exactly.
So, like, I mean, it's okay to disrespect the opponent, right? But don't come disrespect us.
Oh my God, that's funny.
Right, but that's just the way it is. I mean, I know. Who cares? Yeah, who cares what we think?
Exactly.
But I think what we try to do, we say this all the time, we try to look at it as objectively as we can. And I know you're not picking the Browns because it's a homer pick. You gave all good reasons why you think they're going to win. And I have a hard time disagreeing with you. And I mean, you know, like we always say, I might eat some turkey on Thursday and change my mind.
There you go. Yeah, it's not too late to change it. Get convinced by your family on Thanksgiving.
So, yeah. Well, happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Thank you, Chud. Thanks. Same to everybody out there. Hopefully the holiday gives people time to listen. Maybe while they're doing all the cooking, they can put the podcast on. Chud, thanks for doing this, buddy. I know you got a busy week, so I appreciate that. We'll hook up next week. I'll be in – we'll probably do this from Denver because I'll be in Denver for a couple days, and then I go from Denver to L.A. on Wednesday. So – I'll probably be in Denver when we're doing this next week. Yeah. So, because the Browns are practicing out there. I got the approval to go. So, I'm looking forward to that. Stay with this team. Stay with this Browns playoff team. So, Anyway, everybody.
So for everyone that doesn't know, they're staying out there and not.
Yeah.
They're not flying back.
Yeah, they're going from Denver to LA and staying out in LA for the week. So
nice. All right.
So anyway, thank you, Chad. Thanks everybody for listening. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com.